for the invitation to be here this morning. I have yearned over the decades to come home. Now, long time ago, I left St. Peter's in Toronto to go to seminary on the prairies. I never felt I was back home in Toronto to be in St. Peter's on a Sunday morning. You see, for me, St. Peter's wasn't a church, it wasn't a congregation, it was family. And largely because of that reason, I chose to take on the collar, which I must say is a little tighter now after 40 years in retirement. I wasn't the only one who inspired. The late Mike Atkins was a server with me here. He served in the Diocese of Huron for many years. And Gary Shearer was a Free Methodist pastor. And at one point, his church was less than half a mile from mine. It is good to be here. And one of the things that strikes me is that you have to go away to come home again. And we'll get to that. But for those who don't know the Robson story, the biggest Robson story will not be here this morning. You see, church was never church until my dad sneezed. We had to wait for it every week. Wonderful times. My mom and dad were among the first families and came to the first service when it was a portable schoolhouse. And I can remember in the old church upstairs standing next to my dad in morning prayer in the Benedictus, waiting for that great line in the house of his servant David. Then at age 6, I joined the newly formed boys' choir. That was the pinnacle of my singing career. Then I was invited, because it was by invitation, to be a server. This cross has hung on my office wall for 50 years. That's what you mean to me. And then in 1981, God willing, and Bishop Abel, Padre Harding, Reverend Bill Davis, who I always call Coach, along with many others, the spirit of Doug Madden, John Greer, lay readers, I was ordained deacon here, and then the next year, many from here came to Kingston, where I was priested. And I hope over the years I've been able to pass on the love he gave to me. As I was thinking about this morning, I actually thought about all the times in my Canadian and American churches when you had guest preachers coming in. And there was a common theme. They always told stories of the past. It's great, it's wonderful to have stories of the past. But for me, as an adult educator, a story of the past must point you to the future. I had a wonderful server in one of my churches. He was about 55, came to the 8 o'clock every week, and he said, "David, there's a reason why the front windshield's a lot bigger than the rear one. It's because we have to move forward." And you're like this. One Sunday morning, he was helping me prepare the altar, and he brought this silver cruet, and I poured it. It was water. Oh, maybe they got the cruets mixed up. So he gave me the second cruet. It was water too. So without missing a beat, he looked me in the eyes and said, "David, come on, you're good." Wonderful memories. So we have going away to come home, and we have stories of the past that move us to the future. There are lots of stories in Scripture of people going away and coming home. The Hebrew people from Egypt, back to the Promised Land. And probably the most famous, one of my favorites, the prodigal son, going away and coming home. And I guess I love that story so much because once when I lived on the prairies, I came home sooner than expected from my parents' home, and I rang the doorbell. My dad answered, turned around, and he shouted, "Brenda, kill the fat cat. My son who is lost has come home." Love that story. But lots of stories of going away and coming back. There are not so many stories about moving forward unless you look at the stories of Jesus. Now, to understand going away and coming home, the stories of moving forward, we need to understand the context of Jewish society at the time of Jesus. And I can summarize that in a very few sentences. Pharisees, who ran the Jewish society, and the Romans liked things done the right way. Jesus, however, talked about doing the right thing. Doing the right thing and doing things the right way are vastly different. See, one of the problems, if you want to do things right, you end up looking to the past where you had victories, etc., in great times. How often do we read of the Jews looking back to, oh, can we have a new king like David? Looking back, the Romans are the same. Jesus, however, talked about doing things right, the right thing. And one of the things of doing the right thing and pointing people forward, he goes, yes, it's good to look back to a king like David. But isn't it better to look at David as the good shepherd? Jesus was always asking people questions. And here's trivia for you. I love trivia. It is estimated, between duplicates, Jesus was asked 183 questions. He asked 307. Of those 183 questions that were posed to Jesus, he only answered 3 directly. He often responded to a question with a question. You know the story of the old rabbi? Rabbi, why do you always answer a question with a question? What do you mean? But Jesus would often answer a question by either adding one little element to the story and changing the context, or he'd ask another question. Why would he do that? Why would he ask a lot of questions? I think that instead of giving people pat, staid answers, he was challenging people to think. If you have to think about the question being asked, you end up taking ownership of the question. And that's what Jesus wanted people to do. He wanted people to take ownership of their faith. When Jesus asked questions, needless to say, he got senior management of the Jewish church and the Roman officials mad because he was asking questions about doing the right thing. They did not want to hear. They didn't like the things he was doing. In every single story which we read about the poor, Jesus does not walk past them. When we have stories of immigrants, he dealt with them. He didn't build walls. So now you know my political philosophy. He was always warm and inviting to everyone. How did Jesus treat women? You know, at that time and age, women were property. Did you know that? If a Jewish man went to the square, he could walk up and said to those gathered, "About my wife, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you. Done deal. She's divorced. Can she go back to her family? No, because that's shame. So she's done. That was the environment of Jesus' time. And yet, the longest single interaction Jesus has in the whole Gospels is with the woman at the well. Lots of respect for women. And for the sick. What about lepers? In Jewish society, if somebody had leprosy and you touched them, they believed you took on the leprosy. Oh, you've got the goodies now. Remember playing that in the schoolyard? You've got that disease now. You have shame, humiliation, and you're no longer part of the community because of this disease. And how did Jesus respond to those situations? Metaphorically saying, I haven't changed. That guy's healed. I'm okay. Boy, did that leadership mad. But Jesus was always pushing the boundaries to get people to look at moving forward, to changing their viewpoints, to looking back and looking forward, taking ownership of their faith. We may say, oh, that was wonderful at the time of Jesus, because those first disciples in the first generation, they took ownership of their faith. They asked lots of questions. And my God, they left and went away a lot, didn't they? They went all over the globe. Some came back. But one of the realities is when you go away, and sometimes when you come back, when you try to push forward, when you try to do the right thing, that means taking a risk. And part of the Christian faith means taking risks. But you know what the typical Anglican response is to risk? You know the words. We have never done it that way before. We may laugh, but sadly, it's true. Once I was in a big meeting, bishops, and we're going to do this big stewardship campaign, blah, 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 and we're going to ask the people in the church what they want to grow the church. Yes, Robson. I think he was very reluctant. And I stood up, Bishop, the people in the church already have what they want. They're here. If we want to grow the church, we need to ask those who have left. That did not go over very well at all. You got to move forward. We've got to take risks. We have the same obligation and task as those first generations of Christians. What do we do to move forward? How do we take risks? How and when do we do the right thing? How do we go away but come home again? Those are great challenges for us. They were great challenges for the first generation of the church. It was a great challenge for Jesus, who was always trying to get people to take ownership of the faith, to take it deeper and deeper. The Pharisees, they wanted the Jews to have religion. Jesus wanted the people to have spirituality. There's a difference. How can we use the voice of God that is in all of us? Move forward. To take risks. To go away, come home. To do the right thing. Sometimes, maybe a lot, taking risks is unpopular. Albert Einstein, fascinating individual, once said, to do the right thing isn't always popular, and it's not always popular to do the right things. Jesus was never about popularity. How often in the church today do we want to morph into being popular? Again, that's a question that doesn't go over well with bishops. How do we live our faith today? Well, we can grab onto the faith of the past to hold us and carry us. But our eyes are at the front of the head. How do we move forward in faith? How do we as individuals and corporate bodies live the risen Christ today? I don't know the answer. My job is just to give you the question. Can we consider that homework? How do we take rest today? How do we live our faith today or tomorrow? How, forgetting popularity, do we try to live in the image of Christ? To do the right thing. Poor, sick, firm, the outsider, and indeed, for all of God's children. How do we raise each other up?